Chaos is an indicator that change is required.
Self-control is strength. Right thought is mastery. Calmness is power. Peace be still.
Patience is the calm acceptance that things can happen in a different order than the one you have in mind.
Better to fight for something than live for nothing.
Those who inspire lead.
Daiman Jinman is a Haitian proverb that means beyond every mountain, there's another mountain.
We're going to ask you this question all f***ing day long. Why are you here?
The more powerful language we speak, the less power we leak. My name is Luke Kayam. We are a brotherhood of men committed to show up. This is the Fathers of the Future podcast.
Show up! Don't quit! Do the work! Lead with love! Trust the process!
Welcome to the Fathers of the Future podcast. I am joined by Coach Marcus Wheaton. Coach, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. We were introduced a little over 2 years ago, I would say.
Yeah, Coach Hirsch.
Yeah, Coach Hirsch. And you are a coach in the speed world, but this is a show about fatherhood. So before we get into what you do, we want to learn a little bit more about who are you.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you four questions, and I'm going to let you spit them any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
Who are you? Whose are you? Where are you? And where are you going?
Whose are you? First, I'm God's child. Number one, foremost. Where I'm going, I have no clue. I think we all have an identifying feature of trying to figure out where we're at, where we're going. Can't know where you're at unless you know where you're going. But I view that a little bit different. Your path is governed by where God wants you and where he leads you. And me trying to make that path, you know, it never works. So I know why it doesn't work. I think I just, I wake up in the morning and I see what God has in store for me. You know, where he wants me to do, where he wants me to do it at. And I let that be my path, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Great way to start this thing.
Yeah.
And so we're in your office inside of your training facility here in Tempe, Arizona.
Tempe.
And there's a picture of your son handing a referee a football.
Football.
For the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yes.
With the number 11 and the name Wheaton on his back.
Name Wheaton.
Before he got there, how did you get to this place where you've been coaching and teaching? How old is your son now?
32.
32.
33. Yep.
And you have two more?
Yes.
Yep.
Three more.
Ages, so, three more?
30. So 33. Marquise is the oldest. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Marcus, second, 32. Pittsburgh Steelers. One other son that is not choosing to go to college. He's going to go to school, but just trying to figure it out, trying to find his way. He was over at a college in California and just didn't feel right. And then I have a daughter who chose, instead of sports, to do the mom, dad, husband, wife, start the family thing. So I'm blessed in that they all made it to this point.
And so how did you get here in terms of the coaching and the training? And before you answer that, you know, we're not just at a speed center, right? It's called Wheaton Solutions Speed. This is what you come here for.
Yeah.
In the back of my head, when I was introduced to you, it was, yeah, you know, we got a strength coach. We got an X coach. We got a, okay, great. Let's get a speed coach.
Yeah.
These kids aren't as fast as they can be.
Right.
And nobody's ever taught them how. But after the first 10 minutes of being here in this room with you and my son at the time, eighth grade going into ninth grade,
mm-hmm.
you didn't just talk to us about the physicality.
Right.
You took the time to sit us down and break things down, having two kids in the NFL and teaching high level fitness and health and training. You talked to us about the mental game.
Right.
And that's, again, as a coach, lifelong coach, 20 years. I know you've been in it 28. We're attracted to that. And so how did you get to coaching? What was your career like? And ultimately, did you have a father growing up? And right. What was that relationship like?
Well, I'll tell you, when you have conditionings behind you that give you seeds to plant in others, those seeds have been pruned in you so that they can grow later. You don't understand it. You don't know why. So in growing up, you know, my roots started here in Arizona. I was 2 years old. My mom wasn't really feeling my dad, biological dad, too much. So we moved on to California. And being a young black man in California, age expectancy to not exceed is 18, 16, 17, 18. So if you made it past that point, and it's a solid number, it's a real number. It's a real way of life that people really go by. So being raised by a single parent mom, I didn't have the dad factor. My mom married who would become my dad, my mentor, when I was two, maybe 3 years old. And military guy. So Mr. John Brown, we were all over the world, Philippines, Germany, Japan. So I got a chance to see other cultures, other lifestyles, how kids growing up in other areas are groomed. I saw the differences in Americans and other countries, if I can say. And then coming back upon the divorce of my mom and my real dad, that I call my real dad. Now my mom's single and we're in LA, Inglewood. So, you know, the stories that you see on TV, the Jordan Down projects, Boys in the Hood. I mean, we lived in those areas, Inglewood, Darby Street. And I watched my mom really struggle, really, really struggle. But one thing I did watch my mom do and I learned from is that she didn't bring a lot of guys around us. Mm. She didn't bring other men in the home. We never, you know, we never got a chance to meet guys or see how they, you know, how they fare with women and that whole, you know, that whole transcript. So my mom raised us for a long time. My mom passed at 17, 16, 17. With that struggle, going through that struggle.
Coach, you were 16,
yes,
17.
Yeah, I was 16, 17.
When you lost your mom?
Lost my mom, cancer. So my whole senior year, you know, was going from practice to hospital. Apparently then went on ahead and died. But make a long story short, 16, 17, my mom dies. I'm homeless. My dad is, who I call my real dad, is overseas with his new family. So we had lost contact for a while. So me and my brother basically were homeless for a while. And the struggle was real. You know, we did things that, you know, you aren't supposed to do. We robbed, we sold drugs, we did everything just to eat. And of course, got further and further away from God. Make a long story short, my grandmothers and the Wheatons here decided that wasn't going to be the path for me. And I ended up here in Phoenix, Arizona. First thing I had to do was go to Bible study on a Wednesday. And that changed my life. Church on Sunday. Slowly, I began to see the things that should be taking place in individual lives as watching some of my cousins and how they were reared. And then God placed a few people in my life that really exposed my Uncle Robert Wheaton, Aunt Doris Wheaton. I had four or five aunties that now became moms. So my life changed drastically in church, back to sports, of course. Went to Phoenix College to pursue all the scholarships that I ended up not taking because obviously I was on the wrong path. Went to Phoenix College, had an opportunity to go to Oregon State, behind Gary Payton at that time, and ended up having a son. There's a lot that happened between 16 and then. A lot of growing up that happened between 16 and then. A lot of come to Jesus kind of moments between 16 and then. But all I knew is that I had made it, you know. That's the story. I had made it. And when I say I make it, it's kind of hard to put in words to be vivid. Sitting on a sideline or a curve in Inglewood, California, on Darby Street, and watching one of the OGs, as we call them, get gutted from his penis all the way up to his neck, and watching his guts spill out on the floor at 15, 14, 13. You're seeing real scenes of that. And the only thing that you can wonder is when my time is going to come, you know? So the crazy thing is as you're going through those things, you're gathering stones. You know, as you walk that path, you're gathering stones. You're seeing what these guys did that they didn't do, or that they should have done. You see fathers that were in certain individual lives and how those kids turn out. You see the mapping, you see the scope of life and how it's supposed to really portray itself. So when my son came, being a absentee father was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. It was not going to happen. So I decided to go to Howard Payne University, Brownwood, Texas. Got an apartment in Dallas. So my wife had my son there, and we began life. But
you broke the generational of what I call curse that maybe your biological father had said or left for you.
Well, the crazy thing is, my biological father, I had a sister that he was amazing to.
Mm.
You know, and when I would ever come up to visit, there was no connection. There's a different world for me as opposed to her and how she lived and how she moved around. So I did have a moment where I came to Phoenix and was around my biological, and there's no connection. There's mm-hmm. no emotion, because when my mom was going through the things she was going through, you weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
I've developed thick skin and knowing that fatherhood is earned. It's not, you know, it's not a noun, it's an adjective, and people use it as a noun. I'm a dad. No, it's an adjective. It describes what you are doing, how you are doing it. And it doesn't have to be your biological dad to be that, to earn that title. So when my dad came back to the States, of course, you know, not understanding what we had been through, that bond, of course, becomes a bond again.
Mm.
and the direction of what you should do and shouldn't do is easily there. I've never asked my dad for anything in life that I needed, never, that he didn't provide for me. But the difference is I never asked him for anything that I didn't need because of how I was raised with my mom. You know, people say pride is a bad thing. No, sometimes pride is great. You know why? Because pride made me get up off my butt and go do what I had to do so I wouldn't have to ask the next person. And when I did have to ask, it hurt. You know, it was a solid, deep, emotional cry going to the closet. I got to do it. But only time I did it was for my kids when I needed to propel them somewhere, get them somewhere, put them in a better position, you know. And my Uncle Robert, as well as my dad, were the two figures in my life. My Uncle Robert is a character that had three sons, and I watched him pour into those three sons, which is why you hear me say that a lot. I watched them when they needed to travel, when they needed to, I watched them work to make sure they had the, you know, the ends meet to get them where they needed to go and buy them what they needed. And then I watched him, even though he maybe struggled sometime, I watched him help me senior day at college. You know, he was there. He would come and be their dad, you know what I mean, junior college. So how you become a father is based on how you're conditioned. It's based on your path. It's based on, I think, the tradition in my family. The Wheaton family is a very strong one as far as fathers being, because all my uncles were in their sons' lives. All my aunts were 100% in their sons' lives. It's just that this was a Wheaton that was docile. This Wheaton was in another land, somewhere else. So I didn't have a chance to harness some of the things that the Wheatons portray. So what got me here is all those lives, all those experience, all those ups and downs that we had growing up. I would pick up stones and put them in my pocket. Now, when that client comes in, I can see where you've been. You know, my major was psychology, and I wanted to really see what you're thinking, understand how to get to you. To tell you the truth, no one knows this, but speed is a facade. I teach it. I know it well, speed and agility. My family is from that. Anything you look at in our whole history is about every area of all of our cousins doing well. And a lot of reasons is because of speed. So I harness that with my sons. How do I perfect what they're doing? So even though, you know, my sons were national champs and 400, you know, they've been in the top five all their lives. My daughter was an excellent sprinter. How do I make them better? So I began to coach them. I didn't want to give them to other coaches because I tried that and I saw what you were putting into my son. You know what? I can do better.
So did Wheaton Solutions start with them? Or
nope.
had it already started?
Nope. It hadn't started yet. So, you know, of course, I, you know, got done with college and my kids started playing professional. I mean, not professional, but started playing sports. And the first coaching team that I put them with, they were good for what they were good for. But I had experienced things like when my cousin Kenny was sent over to Dallas Cowboys, third round draft choice, and I'm living in Dallas. I get a chance to see it for real up close. I get a chance to see that the best aren't in the NFL. I got a chance to see what makes the best, what mentalities that they bring, what habits do they have, what separated the ones that are at the top of the echelon for the ones that weren't. I got a chance to see that firsthand. The Nate Newtons, the Deion Sanders and all those guys. I was there watching as my cousin went through and had a really good career until he got injured. So I was able to see where he came from, where he went. I had a cousin named Derek Wheaton that is a little brother of Kenny and Robbie. And Derek in high school could have went pro in baseball. This kid was amazing. All the speed you needed. He's amazing. And I watched him get gunned down in South Phoenix. I don't know if it was a mistaken identity, but the Lou Holtz, all the big names were coming at. I'm meeting them in the living rooms. So I got a chance to watch that whole recruiting process. And the people that were around him, I watched what they did wrong in going where they were going. I watched, and as I said, just kept picking up stones because I didn't want my kids to hit those same potholes. So as they began to come into their own, that Wheaton name became bigger. It's already big, but I wanted my own branch of it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be big because of what they've done. I wanted to be big because of what I've done and what my family and my branch has done. So my mom was a big factor in that because she said that you're born with two things, your word and your last name. They both have to be big. You got to be able to stand on both of them. Well, the Wheaton name was already big before I got it. I can't claim that. I wanted to make it bigger. I wanted to make my branch bigger. So we started training and I didn't give them a choice.
How old?
When six years old. Marquise, the real football player, came from practice the first day and I don't want to play anymore, Dad. Can't do it. So I remember in the living room, man, just beating him up with pillows and his pads on and throwing him around and he saw the pads didn't hurt anymore. Right then, I was learning how to get around hurdles, get around obstacles. I learned that the easier it is for you to navigate getting around obstacles, the easier it is for that son or that daughter to listen to you, to take what you're trying to give them. I watched them go back to practice the next day as a whole different person. Coaches were like, whoa, from 6 years old, it started there. For both my sons, it started there. So we came back to Phoenix, and of course, I'm going to continue the coaching. But when you have a community such as South Phoenix, where there were a lot of absentee dads, what happens? Parents see you coaching, okay, we're going to go over here with them. And it grew from there.
Yeah, so let's freeze for a second and talk about this absentee dads piece, because I wanted to bring a little data and research to this. This was pulled offline this morning, but the consequences of having a fatherless America can be significant and far-reaching both for children and for society as a whole. Some of the possible consequences include, and this is not new to you,
right?
You're coming from SoCal, and especially in the Los Angeles area. I was born in LA and, you know, grew up in Southern California and in the 80s and, you know, saw a lot of that within a few feet and how quickly that progressed into, you know, what was known as Southern California, you know, gang violence and the beginning of the Bloods and the Crips door.
Yep. 80s.
I can't even imagine what that would have been like without parents. Some of us were born into it and some of us were forced into it. And in this case, these statistics, it's 1 in 4. It's 1 in 4 families in America do not have. So 25%. And that number, as we look at this data, could even be higher. We just don't know. Higher poverty rates, fatherlessness is strongly associated with children living in single parent households and are more likely to experience financial hardship, increased risk of obesity, greater likelihood of behavioral and emotional problems, higher rates of academic failure, increased risk of substance abuse and delinquency, and the greatest consequence overall can be our prison systems and growing up incarceration in the juvenile area and being a lifelong criminal. So if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem, coach. You're doing it. What do we do?
Well, you know, when I hear statistics, I laugh at it. I really do. And I say that because it's two different worlds, right? There is an African-American viewpoint, and then there's the rest of the world's viewpoint. I view it from an African-American viewpoint. So when they say the rate is 1 in 4, it's nowhere near that. It's a lot worse than that. It's getting better, but you know, growing up in the 80s, especially 90s, it was a lot worse than that. Every single person that I knew lived with their mom or their grandma. Every single kid that I knew started there. Systemic racism even makes it even worse. You know, there are avenues, and because you grew up there, you kind of have a familiarity with the plight of the black man, and the black father. But I think the majority of America have no clue, no clue whatsoever. You know, prime example. Coming to where we are now, present day, you have an individual from the South Phoenix area that's going to Chaparral, doing well, grades. He's starting to see that I can get somewhere. He's starting to believe it. The seeds are being planted. People are harvesting, you know, watering that seed. He's growing. He's doing better. Understanding how to live outside of the area that you were raised is hard because there's an umbilical cord that continues to pull you back, especially when you got to go back there every day. We watch this young man, and I'm not going to say any names, but we watched this young man in the wrong place, wrong time. Now he may do life for murder. Mm. So how those two societies deal with that are totally different. The Scottsdale society hurt mentality is like crushed. Like, what the heck is going on? What would make this person this? What would make this person that? African-American side, South Phoenix side, just another system, just another victim. And I say that as true as it is, because he is a victim. He doesn't understand in many cases, how life is supposed to open its doors to you. The only thing that you see is closed doors, no matter where you go. Young football players that are coming out of high school, you take away junior college. You have no other programs in those areas to help these young men develop father skills. You have no programs in that area to help these young men understand what financial literacy is about. You have nothing in that area. It's not a problem until it reaches your doorstep. You get what I'm saying? As long as it's happening over there, we'll deal with it. And you know where I learned this from? In our travels. You know, being USATF track field coach, being a parent of two individuals that play in the league, you travel a lot. When I travel, I want to go to other areas. I want to see how other people are living. I want to meet our people in other areas. And I don't mean just black people, just other people, period. Miami, Florida, Haitians are there. You know, you got so many different customs of people that are you wouldn't normally have contact with, and you're able to meet them and talk to them. And that's what I as growing up, as going through their life, that's what I wanted to do. If I'm going to travel, I might as well make something of it, get some material from it. Mm-hmm. So when I hear statistics about 1 in 5 for us, that doesn't relate. You know, I remember when Marquise was at Southern Miss. He goes to Southern Miss and he's understanding now that it's different. Mississippi kids, Alabama kids, kids that came from areas that were really racially biased. He's from a melting pot. You know, there is no racism here within my group. So he's able to date who he wants freely. He's able to marry who he wants without neglect. I don't worry. We don't put those pressures on them. So he goes to Southern Miss and he's seeing other individuals that are going through what they're going through. And he's wondering why they're grinding so hard. You know, life is okay, ain't it? Not understanding that where they're from, there is nowhere to go back to. They were on grandmother's couch. Someone else has now filled grandmother's couch. There's no home to go back to. They have to make it here. If they don't make it, what are they going to do? So their grind is going to be a hell of a lot harder than yours. Hardest thing to teach as a coach is an athlete who has everything, who's spoiled. Mm-hmm. How do you match that grind? Mm-hmm. Because that's who you're battling with for spots. How do you match that grind? So statistics are great when they're relevant.
Yeah.
You know, many cases, they're not relevant. You know, what we go through and how we condition ourselves as a dad is based on things that are relative. Hands-on, the 80s, crack cocaine, you know, Crips and Bloods were not there because of fighting and violence. They were there to protect the neighborhoods, you know? So you go from protecting the neighborhoods, how do we fix that? Let's add crack, stir the coffee up. Now, those guys are battling and fighting against each other because of neighborhoods. They want this block, they want that block. It's about money. But what's going on in Chicago, Illinois? Mm-hmm. When I first got to Chicago, when Marcus was there, me and Marcella Wheaton are watching the news and we're seeing 23 die. We're thinking, okay, that ain't bad for a year. We're in what, October? That ain't bad. That's a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I watched the news every day. Every time I went there, I watched the news. Every time I went there, there was a major shooting, a major 17 die for, you know, every day. Why is that not news everywhere in the country? How are these guns getting there? So as a father, how do you protect your kids from that environment without sheltering them, without closing them in? Those are the stones that as a dad, you pick up as you go. Those are the stones that you put in your pocket. So when you need them and the young guy's sitting across from you, you can say, hey, I've been there. How can I tell you?
Do you believe that that's possible as a father? And again, with the similarities within, you know, mm-hmm. age and demographic and understanding we come from different places mm-hmm. and having kids, mm-hmm. One who, let's just say of the kids, one is not as motivated as he possibly could
be, yeah.
because it's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And the hardships that we had growing up, they made us who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a missing hardship,
yep.
right? How do you instill that without giving them the direct hardship?
Well, I kept my kids from that.
From the hardship.
From the hardship, mm-hmm. right? But mm-hmm. let me explain why. So when we go to Inglewood and we ride through, I want them to see where I came from. And they're looking like, whoa, don't want to be here, right? So when my sons were young, we went and fed the homeless. When my sons were young, they went and did Beavers Without Borders. So they would go to other countries and help build habitat homes for people who lived in dirt. You know, I created those scenarios, but I captured them so that they couldn't spill over. There's barriers there. Mm. You know, I kind of harnessed that. So I'll give you a prime example. Say your son comes to live with me and I'm able to go and visit some of the people that I visit. Does he go back home the same person now that he's able to see the kids that one he is going against every day, the kids that he knows at school, that he talks to at school, that he eats lunch with at school, that he enjoys to be around? If he goes and sees where they're from and what they go to when they come home, what happens to his stability? Whoa, this is for real. This is life. There's an area that you as a dad shows your protection and you're going to put that around your son so he does not have to harness those areas. But hearing it from you and hearing it from someone else is totally different, right? The feeling that he's going to get from me explaining why you are spoiled, the feeling that he's going to get from me explaining why the percentage of individuals like you will never make it in pro or never make it at the echelon of college because of this. Does he have the ability? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Every kid that has decent speed coming off the block has the ability to make it. It's just the path. It's the choices, right? The choices that they make, the choices that we make as parents for them because they're not old enough to make those choices. The Let him bump his head every now and then. Mm-hmm. Let him feel it every now and then. Come back to my neck of the woods and let's walk around for a while. Let's see that. Problem is that when you send, say, an African-American kid from a certain area to live where you are, it's a fantasy world. Mm-hmm. Same things. You know what I mean? Sit down, eat dinner with the family, say grace before you eat. Can I be excused? Yes, you may. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Those are the things that I harnessed from kids who made it. If my sons were here, they're going to greet you, as you know, yes, sir, no, sir. They're going to open the doors that they're supposed to open because they want to open them.
And how much of that foundation comes from John Brown?
100%. 100%. Military guy.
Mm-hmm. That's a discipline that is, you know,
totally different.
I've learned a majority of my adult discipline through the military mindset.
Yep. Totally different. But I had a grandmother that was the other side of that, faith-wise. And there's a nice balance between the two before they both passed. And that balance was my grandmother hinged everything on faith. Every thought, every prayer, everything you do is about faith. And the individuals who don't believe, that's their choice. You got to make the choice to believe because it's your life, it's your path. You're born with the same 24 hours that someone else is born with. What you do with yours is going to be a determining factor of whether you go where you're supposed to go or not. And she instilled that in us, right? My dad was the other side of that. He was the respectful guy. Demand your respect. But to demand respect, you got to give respect. The little tools that get you where you want to go. Look a man in the eye when if you got a disagreement, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. We have to fight. I come from a family of fighters. So when I got here, it's a little different. You know, listen, man, I tell you what, let's just agree to disagree. You go your way, I'm gonna go my way. But when you disrespect, now there's no story. But that was my dad. You know, he was real stern with that. I raised my household that way. And I look back to see how they are as men now. And I applaud not myself, but my dad and my mom, because some of the things that they both taught me, I'm still riding on today. Respectability is number one for me. That's the number one goal. I'm not going to sell you. I'm not going to buy you. If you rock with me, you're rocking with me because you respect me. You respect what I do. You respect what I say. You should be able to send your kid to my house to stay for a week and trust that I'm going to treat him as mine. And I would expect the same thing. And that's who I kind of surround myself with, good dads. I don't surround myself with individuals who are deadbeat dads. We're not buddies. Mm-hmm. We're not friends. How you doing? I go about my business. And I do that intentionally.
And how soon do you know in the interview process? When you sit down with a dad and their kid?
Well, to tell you the truth, sometimes the interview process is not for the kid.
Mm-hmm.
It's for the dad. Dads and moms get a lot more out of what I have to say than the kid does. There's been several parents who have sat there and cried emotionally because now you're pointing out things that they're doing wrong as opposed to what the kid's doing wrong. How do you blame it on the kid when you're the originator of it?
Mm, the originator, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Our job is to plant seeds, but they got to be the right seeds. Right? They got to be seeds that God is going to pour some water on. He's not going to pour water on seeds that aren't of him. So mentally, when I talk to parents, I'm telling you where I was at your time. Here's what I did wrong. Here's what I did right. If you choose to listen, great. The best thing about life is choice. We have power of choice. You know what I mean? But God has also the power of choice. You know, he's going to choose whether you're living his life or you're not. Every day that I wake up, I ask myself in things that I do or don't do, would my mom agree with this? Would my dad agree with this? I literally ask myself those things. When I get doing an interview or a speech or anything, I never, ever go to a speech prepared. Never. I never sit into an interview prepared. I open my mouth and I let God tell me what to say. And every single time when they leave, I'm impressed with what I just said and the words that I get and where they come from. What are the conditions for that thought? When you leave here, did you leave with something that you're going to be able to use? So even you and your visits here with your athletes.
It's why I don't drop off or sit in the car.
Exactly.
It's why I know if I'm coming with one of my kids to train, I'm going to need to be prepared to train.
Yeah. But think how many, you're in the training business.
Mm-hmm.
How many parents can't give their kids 2 hours and sit in the stands and watch that little guy? I can count the missed games, missed practices, the missed all my kids' life on one hand. I had jobs that would say at the last moment, hey, you can't go to nationals with your son. We need you here. It's month in. Well, my vacation's been in. Well, this is important. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to leave and go on this job, go on this trip with my son. If I come back and have a job, great. If I don't, I'm not going to miss this trip. And I think once people start to understand that, have an education, I can go find another job. But I'm not going to miss this moment with my son. And if my sons were sitting here... they would tell you, if they looked in the stands and dad wasn't there, something's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, give me a quick case study. And I don't know his name on the top of my head, but I got a chance to be a part of the Wheaton Foundation golf tournament, seventh year. My son played with me. My next door neighbor, Coach Towsley, and his son played. It was an amazing experience. And we got to see a little bit about, you know, this community.
Why we do what we do.
That you've built. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing is, to get parents to come see you, there has to be something that is benefiting of the parent. We both know that. You just can't say, okay, I got this going on this day. Everything is more important. You know, did a big symposium at Mountain Point years back. Dr. Anna Battle, superintendent, assistant superintendent of schools. I had principal. I had everyone there. I had more people on my staff with doctor in front of their name. I get to this symposium that's supposed to be the whole football staff, full football team. I got 11 parents. We gave that symposium as if that room was full. And the two people that I needed to really speak to came to me afterwards. I'm that guy you're talking about. You know, talking about parents being in their kids' lives, not being sandpaper to the program, da-da-da-da. So anyway, with that being said, how do I transform what I'm doing to get parents in? I'm going to use my speed. I'm going to use the gift that God has given me. Everyone has a gift. What it is, you don't know. But I know what my gift is. I'm going to use this platform. So when you have individuals on your clientele list like Will Clay, three-time Olympian, Marcus Wheaton, Marquise Wheaton, Devron Carr, the list goes on. It's huge. Those are individuals that we had not knowing where we were going. We just putting into. And now they're on top of the world. So with Wheaton Solutions, we want to put an apple out there. And we want parents to come because they're getting this. You want your kid to go to the league? We both know the chance of most kids going to the league is almost zero to none. But if you dangle that carrot, you know, parents start to come in.
You get the best product.
You get the best product. The products that we've been getting, and I love it because, you know, we built the program for kids who don't have. There are a lot of programs out there. There are programs that you charge $200 an hour, and they're doing good work. We charge $45 an hour. Parents are going to be like, well, that's kind of high, but we're going to try it out. But then when they see what little Johnny does mentally after, it's not about physical. When they see how little Johnny mentally is preparing for games, how little Johnny is mentally preparing for church, you know, how he's preparing for life at home, how he treats his mom, how he treats his dad. You're not coming here if you're not covering all those bases. So once the hunger is there for that athlete to come, parents like the way they come. Well, here are the parameters that you have to meet to continue to come. If grades aren't there, why are you coming? If it's about the dollar and cents, then I would be charging with being one of the best speed coaches in the country. I'd be charging a lot more. But it's about the mental growth of athletes. And that's what Wheaton Solutions is about. It's about the growth mentally of our athletes that come in so that they have a shot to get a college degree. Not pro, not this, to get a college scholarship.
And if you don't want to go to college, as you explained to my daughter, why are you coming here?
Why are you coming here? There has to be a motive. You know, I could have the gym full of people just want to lose weight and do well. But when I turn the TV on Saturday and I see a Caron Adams, who I've had since 6 years old, who could have been in the American Legion buying drinks for someone, but he's on the gridiron. When we help him get to where he's at, help him get to the high school that he's in, you know, and with a community of other coaches, Marty Barrett, there's a few other people that have been in his life. That's just one individual. But you quickly learn that through Wheaton Solutions that your voice is not big enough. The platform that you're trying is not big enough. And my pain is your pain. When your kid comes in and he can't mentally focus and no scholarships are coming in and, you know, what's going on. And I feel that. Now, how do we correct it? What do we fix? Let's put the plan in place. Like this, like you said, let's write the chapters, see where we are each chapter and hit those milestones. The formula works. It's not something that I'm making up. It works. How do I know it works? Because we go back to 96, 95 with our first kids. One Pop Warner team, four or five of those kids made it to pro. That's crazy. The other half are in either jail, prison, or something of that nature. But I'll take those odds. You know what I mean? And most of these kids had no parents. And if they did have parents, what values were they teaching them? We had more teachers calling us than calling the parents. I had college coaches calling us to talk about an athlete in high school that I coached, instead of calling the school or calling the parent. That's huge. So Wheaton Solutions is about, you know, growing the mentality, carving a path that gives you an identity, planting seeds that allow kids to see, I can make it. I don't have to go this path. I can say no to violence. I can get good grades. It's not, you know, it's not impossible. But when you look at the window from this side of the world, those things are impossible to a lot of athletes. And when they do those things, it surprises them. Now harness the surprise. Control the surprise. Let's work harder. You see, you can do it. Now let's work harder. Then you put them in an environment. You send them to a school that those coaches eat what you eat, drink what you eat, mentally are focused on what you want. I'm still going to fight with them because they're my kids. 18, 17, 16, you got a whole new coach, but they're still mine. And they're mine because I planted the seed at 11 years old, 6 years old, 5 years old. And I'm going to continue to water it until they sign that paper.
What's your sweet spot for age? If you could do it again with your own kids or if you did it with someone else's kids, what do you say is the right time? Is it based on the individual and the family?
This is going to be crazy. It's not based on any of that. It's based on when God brings you to me. Doesn't matter. It's based on when God finally opens your eyes. You finally open your eyes rather and see that there's something else. And God says, I want you to go here. However that is, I had a kid that came in with another kid for the symposium, a brother that came in with, wasn't even a part of the symposium. I mean, the consultation. Who you think left with more food for life? Let's get off the weed. Let's get off this. Let's get off that. Let's stop. You know, you're disrespecting me by coming in with a hoodie. How respectful was that? You know what I mean? Teaching them manners. Dad was overwhelmed. Like, whoa, hold on. We weren't even here for that. Well, God had a plan. I didn't have that plan. So there is no age. It's whenever God says we are going to meet for whatever reason. And you notice that sometimes you meet someone, you're wondering, that was kind of off. And then 5 years later, whoa, this is how it plays a part of your life. You know what I mean? God was putting something in plan in place when I was sitting on that curve in Inglewood. And I'm watching some of the things I'm watching, knowing I'm not going to make it out of here. Most kids look at that and say, well, why even go through it? Why not just off yourself and call it a day? Why go through what you're going to go through just to end up getting killed in the end? That's the viewpoint for a lot of us. But when you have a Robert Wheaton, a Doris Wheaton, a Evelyn Wheaton, you know, when you have family or friends that you can actually sit back with, and Latanya Sheffield, you know, Olympic sprint coach for the last 3 years, named Wheaton Solutions. Wheaton Solutions is not about Wheaton. It's about all the people, Onesimus Pops, all the people who put something into this building block, took something from them and gave it to us when everyone else was going out of business during the virus. How did we grow? How did we grow? At $45 an hour, we don't make enough to pay for this. How are we paying for this? You know what I'm saying? I ask that often, and God continues to make a way. If you're not rooted, if that faith isn't there and you think you're making it, it's not going to work in the end. You got to have vision, and the only vision that you can have is His. He's going to put you in the right place to win, and He's going to put those people, when it's time, in the right place to win. And I think that's the sweet spot.
And I know you won't like this, but I'm going to go ahead and just put it all in one bucket. Coach, pastor, mentor, brother, father, son, guide, someone who can truly look into and speak into your kids. It's an amazing blessing to have you in our backyard and to have you available to us. For everybody else, you're not just a local community coach. You're national, you're global. People come in from all over the world to work with Marcus Wheaton. Please let the listeners know how they can find you on your social media, your website, your information, whatever you want to give out.
Man, just Google Wheaton Solutions. It'll give you every platform. I have an amazing wife that puts it all in place for you.
And shout out to Marcella.
Yep.
She scheduled the podcast for today.
Yes,
so,
she does everything, man. You know, for every strong dad, whether you believe it or not, every strong dad, there's a strong woman behind that person. You know what I mean? For every strong dad. And even my kid's mom, you know, Katrina Wheaton, coming up, had my back 100% when it came to our kids. 100%. I think America needs to know that, you know, when you get married and you have kids, it's not about you anymore. It's not about you anymore. Things you go through and how you live is not about you. And it's about, if you have offspring, it's about you doing your job because they were provided to you to take care of. And you got to do what you're supposed to do. And I think once we all think of that and do it right, I think, you know, we'll change the path that we're on of young teen violence, teen suicides, just think of all the things that are going on with our teens. If mom and dad was in those kids' corner, a lot of times it wouldn't be that. Racism isn't born, it's taught. It's a taught trait.
I look at my son sometimes with some of the actions or choices that he takes and wonder, if I wasn't here,
where would he be?
Oh, man. And then I start to look back at my own childhood and growing up without that positive male role model. When I get a chance to explain what this is about, fathers of the future. And I can get into that next level, next layer. And I explain, you know, I never met my dad. I don't know who he is. You know, he's never once said a single word to me in this lifetime. That's why this exists.
I would have never guessed that. I wouldn't have. And the reason I say I would have never guessed that is because when I met you, you brought value. When I go on your training site and I see what you do, when I listen to a few of your podcasts, there's value. That value has to be learned somewhere, from somewhere. You get what I'm saying? When I see your son comes in, very respectful, mannerisms, look you in the eye, things that we have to correct in other kids, I don't see that. I don't. I before we go, I got one thing that we wanted to do, and I'm going to bring you in on this when we decide to do it. We planned it right before the virus, but we have big symposiums, and I wanted to do a big symposium with, we call it Sons to Kings, and it's where we bring in successful dads, whether it be military, whether it be business, finance, lawyers, whatever. We bring in a few of those. We bring in a few athletes' dads, because what's your biggest question? What did you do right with your kid for both your sons to make pro? That's the biggest question that I have. And my answer is that I didn't do anything. I followed the path, right? And I let the people that needed to be in their lives be in their lives, right? So have a panel, and all we're doing is discussing what we did wrong, what we did right as dads, and then open that up to the community. Have those dads come in with their sons. Have those moms come in, the dads aren't there. Now they can get a little enrichment of what they need to put in because the dad isn't there. You know what I mean? Have a symposium that showcase that. More of an Oprah Winfrey kind of show.
Yeah.
And then people can ask questions.
We'll close out on this one, and I'm sure you can appreciate this. I have a hard time celebrating Father's Day because I celebrated it with my mom the majority of my life.
Yeah.
And so as a father now, you know, that's that one sort of like, it just doesn't sit or fit right with me. And I share that because you said, you know, it's got to have come from somewhere.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised. Well, it came from my mom.
Yes.
It came from my mom. Absolutely.
You think moms can be dads?
No.
No, for real.
No, not at all. Yeah. I know.
Ask a lot of men and they say, oh yeah, they'd be on the little shows and, you know, gotta have a dad. I tell you what, my mom was strong, go toe to toe with anybody. But the difference is my mom's going to teach me how to open doors.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's going to teach me how to respect women so that I'm able to respect my own and my daughter. My mom taught me a lot of things that a dad wouldn't teach, right? My neighborhood taught me about other stuff.
Yeah.
You get me? So the neighborhood was my dad.
Yeah.
Good thing about it is I had someone there to shape and mold. My little brother and I kind of, you know, ran off mom and said, you know what? Nah, we shouldn't do that. You know, we shouldn't do this. You know, I know we got to eat, but that we shouldn't do. And that's what kept us from getting killed. That's what kept us from being in jail. That's what kept us from, you know, the viewpoint. So when I didn't have my dad there, oh, I'm celebrating mom, period.
Yeah.
Because mom was it. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to feel bad about it. I'm not going to feel bad about it. So, but I do get where you're coming from.
Coach Marcus Wheaton, I can't say enough great things about you, brother. I appreciate you. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the energy. Thank you for what you do in this lifetime, in my lifetime, and in these kids' lifetimes, because I normally ask a question and I'm not going to ask it because it's been answered already, but what is your legacy? And so just listening to you during this session, I know exactly what it is, and the listeners out there do as well. And our community, our country, this world is a better place because of you. I thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the show.
Thank you for being here. If you got some value out of this podcast, all we ask is that you simply pay it forward, send it, share it, comment, like it, and let us know that it created some value for you in this life. God bless. One love.